स्थिति मन ही भक्ति देना स्वामी शुभाजी चाय शुभाव सुभद्राचार्य स्थिति मन शिष्यदान चाचा पूर्व शुभाजी Okay. Tonight I thought we should have some more time for questions, because I know you're all very inquisitive persons who are contemplating very deeply all the problems of life. What is the ultimate destination? Give it a try. What kind of questions do you have about anything? Because sometimes we finish classes right before the end and we don't have time for much questions. So, what would you like to ask about? Things you've wondered about Krishna consciousness? Things you find difficult? Things you find too easy? The mysteries of Lord Krishna, the illusions of Maya. Yes.
The situation of Paramatma, is he surrounded by his associates? Does he have pastimes?
Krishna is never alone. Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. Therefore, how could he be alone? Enjoyment always means in the association of others. You couldn't stay alone all your life, could you? So Krishna always has his entourage. As Paramatma, he's there with his entourage. Krishna is never alone. Other questions? Yes?
Well, why is there nothing going on?
I'm just giving an example from everyday experience. Have you ever tried to be alone?
I have. I can't.
Continuously.
I can't see.
Okay.
Good, I can't see. But why Krishna?
Krishna can do anything, but because he's a supreme enjoyer, he likes to have his entourage around. Instead of looking at it that, well, why can't Krishna do it? Think, well, why would Krishna want to be alone if he's the supreme enjoyer? But then again, everything is simply Krishna's expansion. When you say Radha Krishna, you are referring to Krishna and his expanded pleasure potency. So in that sense, Krishna is always alone, because there's nothing existing except Krishna's energies. You understand? Radha Krishna means the exchange of love. Krishna expands his pleasure potency, and that is Srimati Radharani. When Krishna desires to enjoy, he expands his own potency. Of course, when you say, when Krishna decides to enjoy, that implies time. And Krishna is beyond time. But because we have to speak in conventional language, we say things like, when Krishna decided to enjoy. Krishna and Srimati Radharani are internally one and different. The Supreme Source and his pleasure potency. Just like you have a tiny pleasure potency, that's what you're pursuing in the material world. But because it's tiny, it runs into difficulty in the material world. But Krishna's pleasure potency never has a problem. So in that sense, you can say that Krishna is alone, because it's nothing but Krishna. You are Krishna's energy. Everything is Krishna's energy. So in that way, Krishna is perfectly self-satisfied. You understand? taking him? Yes?
It seems additional Bhagavatam that there seems to be so many lives in the universe.
So many
lives. The Bhagavatam describes Sita Loka and the different planets.
Yes.
It seems to be full of life. And at the same time, we don't seem to be able to perceive anything apart from this life and this earth. When you compare to other animals, they seem to be seeing much more than we are seeing.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just wondering, how come we cannot perceive any artificial seem to be able to?
Why can't we
perceive more than we are seeing, actually?
Mm-hmm. If you read the 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, you'll see where Krishna explains that every living entity receives a body with a certain set of senses. So, every living entity is limited in a certain way by the particular set of senses that the creature has. Body and senses mean limitation in the material world. The spiritual body and the spiritual senses, they don't have the limitations. But material body, material senses mean in some way it's limited. So dogs can hear higher sounds than you, but their senses are limited more than yours in other ways. Generally, you can say that in, for example, animal species of life, there's just one sense that's predominant. Some animals, the ears are very predominant. Hearing, they can be captured just by hearing, or the tongue, or smell. But the human body has all senses active, and all the senses are very powerful. That's why Prahlad Maharaj in the Bhagavatam compares the human body and its senses to a man with five wives. Have you ever done that? Can you imagine what it's like for a man to have five wives? Of course, if there are any feminists here, they will object to this example. Do you have any here? You're a lousy feminist.
I'm an objective. I'm an objective person who has four wives.
So, Prahlad Maharaj explained that a man with five wives, they're always pulling, come to me, come to me. So similarly, in the human body, all the senses are like that, they're very strong and pulling. Whereas in animal species, generally one sense is predominant. So, material senses mean that in some way there's limitation. You're wondering why we can't see the life on other planets? Well, why can't we hear what a dog hears? Why can't we see what a cat sees? Why can't we imitate the sharks, who if there's a drop of water, a drop of blood in the ocean, they can sense it from so far away. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains that four types of persons come to him. The inquisitive, those who want knowledge, those who want wealth, and those who are distressed. All of them, the Lord says, are meritorious. Sukriti. They all have auspicious merit in their life because they've approached Krishna. Now, how do you get beyond simply dealing with Krishna consciousness because you want relief? Mm-hmm. The more you absorb yourself in devotional service, the more you'll realize that the treasure is not relief, the treasure is the nectar of engagement in devotional service. Devotional service is beyond relief from material distress. Once you start fully tasting the superior quality of serving Krishna, you'll forget all about just trying to get relief from material distress. That's not very hard to do, to get relief from material distress. Although people are so crazy these days, I think it's a very special thing to get relief from material misery. It's not that big of a deal. Buddha taught that. Buddha taught how to get relief from material distress, but he didn't teach anything more than that. I like to give the example. Let's say you've been banging your head against the wall for countless years, and you thought this was your dharma, this was your activity. And I somehow want to convince you to stop doing that. As soon as you stop doing it, what are you going to feel? You're going to feel relief. Now what? What do you do next, though, once you stop? What is your positive engagement? So Buddha, for example, taught a very concise gospel of how to stop suffering, how to stop banging your head against the wall. But more than that, he didn't teach. You can quote to Buddhists whenever you meet them, Buddha's own words. I've come to teach two things and two things only. What is dukkha, misery, and how to become free from dukkha. More than that, he did not say. So as Prabhupada explained, if you've got someone who's causing a big disturbance, if at least you can get them to just sit down and be quiet, that is something. But it's not the everything. What are they going to do positively? That's the real question. But if they're not intelligent enough to think about what to do positively, at least you've stopped them from causing so much commotion. So in that sense, we don't mind if so many people will actually just do Buddhist meditation all day long, watch the incoming and outgoing breath, and Vipassana meditation, not bother anyone. It would be an improvement. But it's not the ultimate answer. Any of you done these Vipassana meditations and things like that? No? Yes, you have. A little bit. You also? Yes. At first you felt relief, right? But then you couldn't keep it up, because what is your actual engagement? Still, if people would just, you know, sit down and watch their incoming and outgoing breath all day, yeah, things would be, you know, a bit better. Mothers know that sometimes they can get so frustrated with their naughty kids that they just tell the kids, sit in the corner, or go to your room, don't do anything else, I don't care, just go to your room, don't come out. That way the mother gets some peace. But that's not the ultimate solution. Any of you remember being sent to your room when you were kids? Yes. Anyone get sent into the corner? Yes. How long could you stay there? So it was a temporary solution for your mother. She gave her a few moments of peace, but it wasn't the ultimate solution. So the Buddhist approach is like that. Just sit in a corner, at least for a few minutes, and give the world some peace. Hmm.
heard on one lecture that there are different incarnations who represent different opulence, but somehow I miss the knowledge who represents knowledge. You explained that Ramachandra represents pain, Pitu Maharaj opulence, Navanarayan Rishi renunciation, Narasimha Das strength, and Mokini Murti beauty. Who would be knowledge?
That's a detail. You can analyze these things in endless ways, you know. And devotees like to do that because it stirs the ocean of nectar. And you can't say that Mohini Murti represents beauty and Shamasundra doesn't represent beauty. It's just different ways of looking at things. It's endless, these different angles that you can look at things. It's not like cut and dry, you know?
Yeah.
It's just like taking a diamond and turning it in the light different ways, and the light refracts off of it in different ways. So. Anything else? Yes?
I also struggle to find the balance between the personal endeavor and depending on Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how hey, one stops and then has to make it or make it run things.
What's the question?
He has a difficulty distinguishing between personal endeavor and depending on Krishna. Well, what did Krishna tell Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita? Mama Nusmara Yujyam Cha. Fight and think of me. He didn't say, just sleep in the back of the chariot and I'll take care of everything. He said, fight and think of me. What does it mean to think of Krishna? To think how to do this service for Krishna's pleasure. How to make the service in the best way for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord. That's thinking of Krishna. If you have the proper amount of hearing and chanting in your daily schedule, then it's easy to connect all the events of the day to Krishna's pleasure. You'll have the vision to be able to do that. In the old days, we used to talk about the ISKCON sandwich. Hearing and chanting in the morning, practical service during the day, and then hearing and chanting in the evening. It was very effective. In that way, you develop the vision to see things in relation to Krishna. Sometimes it is said that you should act like everything depends on you, knowing that it doesn't. Like a Zen cone or something, you know. Krishna consciousness is not an excuse to just not give your all in all and say, it's all up to Krishna. No, Krishna wants you to give everything, while at the same time, know it's up to him. That's why he told Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, victory or defeat is not your concern. Nimitta matram bhava sabhyasachin. Just be an instrument in the fight. This is hard for us to understand sometimes. How do you act fully, with full enthusiasm, if you're not attached to the results? That's the mystery of bhakti. How a devotee who understands bhakti yoga acts with complete determination but is not attached to the results. Meaning, even from the material point of view, if it looks like there's failure, the devotee is not discouraged. He's happy to have had a chance to serve the Supreme Lord. There's actually never any loss. Just like Srila Prabhupada said about his going to the USA when Somebody asked him, why did you go to the USA? He said, well, some of my God brothers went to England and they did nothing. They failed. So I thought, let me go fail in another place. Yeah.
Our material senses are limited. Yeah. We seem to perceive sometimes things that are spiritual. Sometimes people see apparitions or ghosts. How do you see those?
That's not spiritual, that's subtle material phenomena. Auras and ghosts and all that kind of thing. It's just subtle material stuff. It's not spiritual. The spiritual reality can only be detected by purified senses. Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita that he's got a gross material energy and a subtle material energy. So, don't be surprised that some people can see the subtle material energy. But we want to develop the eyes of bhakti so that we can see the activities of the spiritual world. When you please Krishna, he'll pull back the curtain of Maya and let you see what's going on. Yes?
You say the life after death.
Well, he's asking, is there any life after death? The appropriate question you should ask in today's degraded society is that, is there life before death?
After death, then you are going to another generation, like you are going to rebirth.
Yes, you have read about the Gita?
Yeah.
Well, Krishna explains. Jatasya dhruvam nityur dhruvam janma nityasya cha. For one who has taken birth, death is certain, and for one who has died, birth is certain. Already in this lifetime you've changed your body so many times. Why should you think that death means the final change? No. The cycle of repeated birth and death means you'll accept one body after another. Just like in this lifetime, you've accepted a baby body, teenage body, young man's body. If you live longer, you'll have an old man's body. The soul has given up all those bodies and taken new ones in this lifetime. Similarly, after death, the same process goes on. Therefore, the Lord instructs, do not be bewildered by all these changes of the body. When you were a baby, you had a future, right? When you were a young boy, you had a future. When you were a young adult, you had a future. Now you're a grown man, you have a future. Similarly, the old man has a future. At the time of death, you still have a future. So now your question should be, what kind of body will you get in your next life?
We?
Who?
Everybody.
How do you know? You've asked everybody? You've done a survey? So what's the better way to respond? Instead of we don't know, what should you say?
I
very good. Now, let me give you an example, which I like to give. You're a family man?
No.
But you don't have your own family, but you have parents.
Yeah.
Suppose when you were a little boy living with your parents. They knew they were going to be kicked out of their house. Suppose your father made no plans what house you would go to. What would your mother say? She'd be very disturbed. We're going to be kicked out of this house soon. We have to find another place to live. So why is it that we can live in these bodies and not have any plans for what our future body will be? It's very foolish. What is so important that we can do in this life that makes it so we don't have to think what the next life will be? Are we really doing something so important? Just like if you look at your life, are you really doing things so important that you have no need to consider what your next life will be? Because you're doing such monumental important things right now. What do you think?
People say that if you do good or bad, you know, it all affects in your next result.
Everybody heard what you said?
No.
People say if you do good and bad, or bad, it affects your next birth. It affects this birth and the next. It's like if you eat meat in this lifetime, you have bad health, and in your next lifetime, you have to be killed because of you participated in the chain of animal slaughter. So there's a reaction in this life also. You have bad health. Anything else?
Like they say that not to eat any non-veg, it's not good according to Bhagavad Gita.
Yes, you have read Bhagavad Gita?
Yes.
Yes, well you should read Bhagavad Gita as it is and you'll understand what Krishna wants of you. Krishna says, offer me leaf, fruit, flower, water. If it's done with devotion, I'll accept it. He doesn't say anywhere in Bhagavad Gita, offer me a steak, offer me an egg, I'll take an omelet. Doesn't say that. So you need to study Bhagavad Gita, and then your life will become successful. So you have to think, what will my future birth be? That is intelligent. If you simply say, who knows, who cares? That's very foolish. What do you think?
I think the present status is more important.
Present status is more important?
Like if I am doing now the good thing, I don't bother what about my next week. But
you heard? He says if he's doing good things now, then he doesn't have to worry about what his next rebirth is. So who decides what the good things are?
I don't know.
So how can you do good things then if you don't know what the standard is? You don't know what the law is. So how do you know what is good and what is not good?
Which does not hurt another.
How do you know what hurts and what doesn't hurt? Can you see all the reactions to what you do?
Yeah, I can understand
everything. Everything?
Not everything.
For example, if you eat a hamburger, can you see all the reactions?
Reactions from the
that an animal had to die so you can munch on it. Have you ever been to a slaughterhouse?
Yeah.
You studied it? So that shows you the kind of reactions you get. Your senses are limited. You cannot understand the whole network of action and reaction. It's too vast. Just like you take a rock and you throw it into the lake, it causes concentric circles. But you, just because your naked eye sees the circles, the concentric circles stopping, doesn't mean that you have seen the end of the reactions, right? the whole universe will never be the same because you threw a rock into the lake. But your vision, your senses can only perceive a little bit of the reactions. But Krishna, as the super soul of everyone's heart, sees all the reactions possible. How do you know what is good?
It does not hurt other person. I think whatever I am doing is good to me and to others.
But how much can you see? Suppose, okay.
When whatever I do is feeling happy. That means I can analyze that, okay, whatever I am doing is making me feeling good.
When you were a little boy, let's say 5 years old, didn't you do a lot of things which you thought were harmless? And yet your parents told you, no, this is not good? When you were a little boy, did you ever try to have fun by sticking a metal knife into a PowerPoint? You did that, huh? It looked like honest fun, didn't it? But your parents stopped you. Why?
Because they have much knowledge.
Yes. So Bhagavad Gita Krishna is stopping you. Because he has much knowledge. Okay. He has the most knowledge. He's the source of all knowledge. So he's saying, stop. Don't stick your knife into the PowerPoint. Don't ruin yourself with bad karma. Why did you accept when your parents said stop?
They don't beat me.
Yes. So Krishna knows that people who don't have a deep understanding of material nature at least should have fear, because yes, there'll be a reaction. So fear has a place. But when you became 10 years old, were you still afraid that, you know, if your parents would beat you if you stuck the knife into the PowerPoint?
No, I'm not sure.
Yeah, you understand the electricity, you know, I shouldn't do that. So similarly, when you get knowledge, when you understand Bhagavad Gita, then you'll move beyond the fear level into appreciation. Just like now you appreciate your parents. They stopped you from sticking the knife in. So when you were a five-year-old boy, you were simply afraid. Oh, I don't know why they're stopping me, but I don't want them to beat me. But as your knowledge increased, then your appreciation increased. Similarly, when your knowledge of Krishna increases, then your appreciation of Krishna will increase. But fear is better than nothing. You should be afraid. What will my next life be? How will my actions bring about reactions? Better than that, though, is to know how to live positively. How to live in a way that attracts Krishna's attention. So don't be satisfied with your present state of knowledge. Increase. Take the knowledge coming from Lord Krishna, and then you'll be able to perceive what is reality. Otherwise, you'll just speculate. Well, this looks good to me. We can ask these other young men here. They've grown up in a different way than you, I'm sure. How many times when you had a girlfriend, you know, you just kind of, you know, give her what you like, and then, you know, you were joking about it with your friends, like, yeah, I haven't heard her, you know. What's the big deal? Right? All the ladies are looking like, they're always surprised that men talk like this. No, what's that big deal? So she cried a bit. Big deal, you know. She called me with her girlfriend. Big deal. It happens all the time. That is that. wasn't anything serious. It was just for a night, you know. That's what that was the problem. Yeah, that's what they thought. Why are you so upset? You know, I care for her more than the other girl I was with, but you know, it's just one of those things. Didn't mean to hurt anybody. It actually didn't change my feelings for her. Is that how men would get? So you can easily rationalize to yourself, oh, this is not hurting anyone. But how deeply do you see? I'm just giving an ordinary example from human relationships that many people don't see how they're hurting the other person. Other questions? Yes?
You say if you don't know the law and you don't have knowledge, you don't know what is good and bad. So why, not in everything, but in some certain things, different religions have different standards?
Because different religions are meant for different levels of intelligence. You notice in Bhagavad Gita that there's no verses like thou shalt not kill or thou shalt not steal. Why is that? If you have to tell someone don't kill or don't steal, what does it mean that person is, or potentially? Yeah. Bhagavad Gita is meant for the most advanced person. Arjuna is far above the level of human beings today. So that's the advantage of Bhagavad Gita. Krishna is speaking to a level of intelligence that is far beyond what you have today, therefore you can benefit much more. You understand? Bhagavad Gita is not spoken to fishermen or simple people living in the desert. Is spoken to Arjuna, who understood there's life on other planets, who understood there's life after life, birth after birth, who understood that there's a material and spiritual world. So if you want the highest level of knowledge, you have to find the highest level of person. Because the highest level of knowledge is transmitted to the highest level of person. If you want something simple, then find out what's been taught to simple people.
So this different standard creates conflict or Krishna should
be solidarity. No. Krishna gives standards for different levels of human beings. But he makes what is the real standard known. In the Vedas, you'll find instructions that if you want to eat meat, you can do it once a month. You have to take some animal like a goat into the middle of the night and cut its throat yourself. Then you have to whisper in the animal's ear, just like I'm killing you in this life, in the next life, you'll kill me. That instruction is there in the Vedas because some people want to eat meat, so then that's a facility. Obviously, you should think twice, you know, by the whole process. Like the Sanskrit word for meat is mamsa, you, me. First it's you, then it's me. So you have to understand there are different levels of human beings, therefore there are different levels of instruction. Krishna is merciful to everyone. For some people, all they can understand is that there is a God. Many people can't even understand that. But the Vedic knowledge is the most comprehensive and conclusive knowledge of the science of God. If you have a 5-year-old boy, you're not going to teach him, you know, things that a university age person is taught, would you? You teach the boy 1 + 1 = 2. I remember when I was, how old? I must have been between 3 and 4. My mother was teaching me how to read. So every time I read something correctly, she'd reward me with a stick of chewing gum. I thought, wow, this is great. Do you think I would be made enthusiastic these days by that kind of reward? But when I was a 3 or 4 year old, it was very attractive. All I do is read this word, and I get a stick of gum. So she was teaching according to the level of my capacity at that time. But I don't expect her to teach the same way when I'm 12 or 14, right? Okay, so Krishna is the most expert teacher. He gives something for everyone, but at the same time he tells you what is the highest. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells you, I'm giving you the most confidential knowledge. He doesn't just say it, he does it. Because some people are, many people are even under the instructions in the Vedas meant for less than 1,000 people. Some people are even underneath that. Those who are meat eaters, means every day, who don't follow any kind of proper ritual or engage in that activity, they are underneath the Vedas. The Sanskrit term is malecha and yavana, outside of Vedic Dharma. So you're asking, why, if there are instructions in the Vedas meant for less than 1,000 people, what's the need of other religions? But many people are under even the bottom level of the Vedas. You understand? That's what you have going on today. More what?
Tolerant.
Tolerant?
Yes.
Of course. What do you mean, though, exactly, by tolerant? It is, if I say that it's very, if I say that you have learned 1 + 1 = 2, does that mean I'm intolerant?
No, but if you, the one who has more knowledge, then if a child, if there is a knowledge, tries to, say something nonsense, you just say, okay, you come to, you want to argue with that child.
Krishna says that in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says, don't disturb the minds of those who are so attached to materialistic activity. But the devotee of the Lord often is more merciful than the Lord. That's Krishna's arrangement. So the devotee wants to help everyone. Krishna can be very strict. Alright? Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.